Advanced Studio Classroom is on the air. Is disability a matter of environment? Today on Advanced. Hello, listeners. Welcome to Advanced Studio Classroom. My name is Peter, and you are joining us today, Tuesday, September 15th, 2026, for day two of our health article for the month of September. It is called The ADHD Advantage, Redefining the Strengths and Challenges of Attention Deficit Hyperactivity Disorder. And if nothing else, by the end of this article, we will all know exactly what ADHD stands for, Attention Deficit Hyperactivity Disorder. As we said yesterday, deficit means a lack of something, in this case, attention, and hyperactivity means more activity than is normal, more activity, too much energy, like a small child that can't focus and just keeps running around from this and that. Attention deficit hyperactivity disorder, this mental illness, which apparently has some advantages. We learned yesterday of some famous people, very famous people in our world, who not only suffer from ADHD, but have credited ADHD for their success. Among these people, the great basketball player Michael Jordan, the great gymnasts, Olympic gymnast Simone Biles, as well as the swimmer Michael Phelps, Richard Branson, the founder of Virgin Atlantic Airlines, as well as JetBlue Airlines founder David Neeleman. All these people have ADHD and credit it for their success. So we will unpack this idea a bit more today in day two of our article. And when I say we, of course, I do mean myself and my co-panelist. Joining us for day two, welcome back to the studio, Rebecca.
Hi, Peter. Hi, everyone.
Okay. Good to have you back, Rebecca, and good to have you listeners with us here for day two of this article. Now, to get us thinking about this a bit more, like we said, yesterday we read about how ADHD has some advantages, it appears. This psychiatrist, Dale Archer, has a hypothesis that ADHD exists on a continuum, which is to say a range of spectrum. You can have like a little ADHD or a lot of ADHD, but if you have like a medium amount, if you're in the middle on that continuum, on that range of ADHD, then you might have just as many benefits as you have disadvantages. So, Rebecca, let's, just as a thought experiment here, let's imagine that you can be given, anyone can be given ADHD. It's like comes in a pill, for example. Would you take that pill?
Peter, that's a hard question to answer. I think most people would say no, but I think I would say it depends. I would take that pill if you promised that I would be put in an environment where I could do my gift. Like, for example, if I love to swim like Michael Phelps, you would put me in an environment where I can swim like 10 hours a day. Like, you would put me in the right environment for me so that I can work on that gift.
Okay.
So
sure.
If you put me in the right environment where I can work on the gift, yes, I will take it. But if you're just going to put me in a normal environment, like an environment we're used to, like in a traditional school, I would absolutely not want it, because in a traditional environment, children with who are neurodivergent, yesterday we learned that word, it's actually a very hot word right now, you often see in the news. To be neurodivergent just means you have a condition or disorder that makes you kind of different than how normal people process information. So that could be ADHD, dyslexia, just many, many different kinds of disorders. So in a normal traditional environment, in a traditional school, in a normal company, people with ADHD would really struggle.
Right.
So that's why I say it really depends. Are you going to put me in an environment where I can work on that thing that fascinates me?
Okay, so in your current environment then, I assume you would prefer not to have the ADHD.
No, it would be hard. Like in a normal environment like here, it would be extremely hard to have ADHD.
Yeah, no, I agree. And That's a good answer, that it depends a lot on your environment, on what you're going to be doing.
And on the people around you.
Yes.
Because what I really want to say is yesterday we talked about a lot of these very successful people.
Yeah.
And I think that in large part they're successful because when they were children or when they were still pretty young, there were people in their lives that pushed them in some direction, so that maybe they had the mother or father who said, it's okay, you're not good at school, that's okay, but you love to start businesses, go ahead, dear, go ahead and start your own business.
Yeah.
You know, or, you know, maybe one of the athlete's mothers said, oh, my kid really loves sports, so let me put my kid in more sports.
Mm-hmm.
So they had an adult in their life that realized that they love something or they're really good at something, and they were willing to put them on that path.
Yes.
So I think that is really critical.
Because absolutely.
If the parent were just like, oh, my kid is really terrible at school, and then I just, like, every day the kid comes home and I just get angry at him or her, I just spank him or her, and I just give him or her a really hard time and tell him or her she's so stupid.
Right.
Then this would be a completely different outcome.
Right, right. If we treat the disease like character failing.
Yes.
Yeah, that it's just you're not disciplined, you don't have the right willpower, or you don't have enough willpower, as opposed to having an actual disease of some sort that, you know, has nothing to do with your moral ability. Yeah, very good answer. And that's sort of what I was getting at in our tag today. Is disability a matter of environment? Because depending on the environment, the upbringing you have, as you said, the kind of school you go to, the kind of job you do, like in the answer to the question that you gave, Rebecca, that can all impact how much your disability is a disability. Because one of the points of the article here is that in certain environments, for certain activities, ADHD may actually be more of a benefit than a disability. Fascinating idea. So let's waste no more time, and not that we're wasting time, but let's get right into our article now. We'll do two readings today. So let's go into our first reading now.
A mixed bag of strengths and struggles. Greenberg says many with neurological differences overperform in some areas and underperform in others. I'll be interviewing someone who is an incredible leader, incredible manager, very good at relationships, but can't really keep friendships because they're very bad at texting back or remembering birthdays, she explains. That's why Greenberg encourages those who work with, live with, love, or have other close ties to someone with ADHD to not take certain characteristics of the condition personally. More support needed. There are a lot of everyday activities that present obstacles for those with ADHD, and access to support can make a real difference. How disabled we are happens at the intersection between our impairment and our environment. Most schools and most workplaces are not built for ADHD brains, so that is why it's a disability, explains Megan Anna Neff, an author and clinical psychologist.
All right. So right at our beginning of our section here, the subhead, a mixed bag of strengths and struggles. What's a mixed bag, Rebecca?
So a mixed bag, it's just a group of things or people, but they're very different from each other. So in the mixed bag, I might have a chocolate bar, I might have a protein bar, I might have an apple. It's just very different things in the same bag.
Right, right. You might have a radio. You might have,
That would be a
very mixed bag.
Yes.
A mixed bag of, but yeah, normally in conversation, it's used not just to represent randomness, but that, like, good things and bad things. When something is a mix, we'll say, like, this new film from the famous director is a mixed bag. It's good in some ways, not in others. And so ADHD is described as a mixed bag of strengths and struggles. Greenberg, that is Sarah Greenberg, a licensed psychotherapist for neurodivergence, whom we met yesterday, says that many with neurological differences overperform in some areas and underperform in others. Now, she has a quote here, which gives an interesting idea. I just want to pick at a little bit here. The quote says, I, Greenberg, will be interviewing someone who is an incredible leader, incredible manager, very good at relationships, but can't really keep friendships because they're very bad at texting back or remembering birthdays, she explains. Now, I get that idea, Rebecca, but it's a little odd the way it's phrased because she says this person, this hypothetical person Greenberg describes, is very good at relationships,
yes,
but can't really keep friendships.
That's
Does
strange.
She mean professional relationships, you think?
I guess. Maybe this person at work, because, you know, at work, we don't have to spend so much time asking someone, how do you feel?
Yeah.
A lot of the time.
Yeah.
So maybe she's saying that at work, this person is okay. Work relationships, she's okay.
Yeah.
But in life, that person's not okay because they don't show that they care enough.
Yeah, yeah. No, I've she could be describing me a little bit here. I tend to be very good and very I tend to be more connected with people in the work I'm doing with them.
Right.
Whereas outside of that work, it's not that I stop liking them or I don't care about them anymore, but there's just something about how I'm less focused on maintaining the relationship with them outside of that work environment, whether it's work here at ORTV or back in my old days in New York as a theater actor. It could be I'm down near the 1 to 4 section of the continuum of ADHD. Do you find that in your own life at all, or is this just me?
Well, I think sometimes it's just the busyness.
Mm.
Like maybe our work or whatever takes up all our attention is taking up so much of our attention, we just don't have the energy or the time to spend on others. And then also it's just a lot of times just personality differences. Like some people are very okay with just having a few good friends.
That's true.
You don't need a ton of good friends.
No.
You know, just a few good friends. It's enough.
Yeah.
So I think, you know, it's okay.
Yeah. Well, good. And I'm glad to hear that. And Greenberg also in our next line here gives us a little encouragement too. It says, Greenberg encourages those who work with, live with, love, or have other close ties to someone with ADHD. Greenberg encourages these kinds of people to do what, Rebecca?
Not to take certain characteristics of the condition personally. So what she's trying to say that is like maybe, for example, that loved one never, like when you text them, they read your line or they read your text and they never text back.
Yeah.
Don't feel discouraged and hurt and think that that person doesn't love you because they don't text back.
Right.
Maybe you have to understand that's just part of their ADHD.
Yeah,
they just read it and then they move on to something else. They just don't have the time or the patience to follow up.
Right.
And don't feel sad.
Right.
You just have to understand. And I think, I mean, it goes back to knowledge is power.
Mm-hmm.
So like it might not be ADHD, but if you live with people who have certain conditions, it could be mentally, it could be physically. It's really important to know like what people in their condition, what are some typical symptoms or typical actions, because then you will know that this is just part of that condition.
Right, right. And it does, as perhaps some listeners can kind of hear, read between the lines here, there is an interesting idea that the author of the article doesn't really unpack. But this whole idea of, okay, so if someone who I think I'm friends with, I send them a text, they don't text me back. Maybe that happens several times. Is it that they have ADHD or is it that they're not really that good of a friend to me?
Yes. You know, that's a good question.
I think what the value of this article is that it reminds us that it could be in such a case that the person has ADHD and that we should take that into account. But I don't think it's saying, or that we should think, that every time someone doesn't text you back, a supposed friend, that necessessarily means, oh, they must have ADHD. It could be there's an emotional issue there.
They just don't care enough.
Exactly.
Like I would honestly say for most people who don't have a certain condition, if they're not texting you back, you're just not that important.
Yeah.
Like, we also have to understand that. And that's okay.
Mm-hmm.
It's okay. Then you just don't put them so high on your priority list.
Right. Change your expectations of them. Absolutely. Our section here in the next beginning of the section, really, says that there are a lot of everyday activities that present obstacles for those with ADHD. We talked about that yesterday somewhat. And access to support can make a real difference. And we meet another person here, Megan Anna Neff, who closes our section here with a quote. She says, does Megan Ananeff, how disabled we are happens at the intersection between our impairment and our environment. Can you unpack that thought for us, Rebecca?
So, okay. Disabled just means you're not able to function well. So if something is disabled, it means you have a handicap, you have something that prevents you from functioning well. And then impairment is also kind of a similar word. Something that is impaired is something that has some disability, some damage. So that's impairment. And then, so how handicapped you are really depends on your condition, or here we're using the word impairment, and the environment. So for example, let me put Michael Phelps in a swimming pool.
Yeah.
In a swimming pool, there's nobody in the world as good as Michael Phelps.
Yeah.
So in the swimming pool, he has no disability. He completely rocks it. That's his place. Like, he is technically a fish in the water. Fish in the water, the idiom we say when someone's in the perfect condition for them. But if you put Michael Phelps, and let's say we take a 10-year-old Michael Phelps, and we put him in a traditional school where he just has to listen to the teacher talk and teacher lecture all day long. Now, Michael Phelps is really going to struggle.
Right.
In that environment, he's severely disabled. He is basically, he has a huge handicap.
Yes.
He just will not do well. So here, I think this is a powerful statement, is to say if people are put in the right condition, then they're not disabled. Like, there's no problem or defect with them. In fact, they might even do better than everybody else because it's the right place for them.
But in a different setting, in a different environment, they would struggle more than others. We all struggle a little bit, but they would struggle even more so because, and then this raises the question, you know, is there such a thing as disability? Or is it all just a matter of the environment you find yourself in?
Yes. Like, for example, we use the term, like, even now we have very politically correct terms like neurodivergent.
Yeah.
It's such a gentle, beautiful term. Like, we accept people who are different from us. It's neurodivergent. It's not they have a mental illness.
Right.
Very a beautiful word, a very politically correct word. But it raises a good question because all of us, all of us have our strange quirks and things like that. We're all kind of strange. Nobody is like not strange. Everybody has their strange things. But at what point are you disabled? Like, you can't function well. You're handicapped. You're basically walking on crutches. And at what point are you considered normal? You know, that's
right.
A good
because
question.
If we all lived in the ocean, would we
even
would
all
need
be
crutches?
Disabled.
Yeah.
Michael Phelps would not be disabled because he can sure swim.
Right,
but
exactly.
Most of us would be very disabled because we never mastered swimming enough.
Right. Some deeper ideas here that we're touching on, and I'm glad that we're able to do this. I'm glad the article is able to do this. So let's go then now into our second and final section for today, where we will explore even more these ideas of disability versus environment and some practical tips on how to the way forward for people with ADHD. Let's go into our second reading now.
Neff believes ADHD should be classified as a disability so that those who need support, resources, and legal protections can continue to access them. However, it's also important to acknowledge that many with ADHD do not consider themselves disabled and shouldn't be labeled as such. When we have structures and environments where they can support that divergent thinking, when we can channel our interest into our career or creativity or out-of-the-box thinking, there absolutely are powerful things that can come of that, she says. Strengths versus challenges. Having control over her work environment has allowed Neff to thrive as a medical professional with ADHD and autism. Greenberg says she joined the organization as a psychotherapist with ADHD to study learning differences and apply those strategies to organizations of all shapes and sizes. Like them, I too struggled in traditional academic and workplace settings, but have gone on to have a successful career as a freelance journalist and author, not despite my ADHD, but because of it. As our collective understanding of neurodiversity expands, those with ADHD are finding ways to better leverage many natural strengths and overcome natural challenges.
All right, so here I think is the real maybe meat of our article, or certainly the most fascinating part of it, this opening paragraph of our second section. Neff believes, Megan Anna Neff, believes ADHD should be classified as a disability so that those who need support, resources, legal protections can continue to access them, can get them. However, it's also important to acknowledge that many with ADHD do not consider themselves disabled and shouldn't be labeled as such. Now, here is a great example of a word we learned yesterday, paradox. On the one hand, Neff believes, and obviously Neff is not alone in this, that there is, you know, this thinking that says ADHD should be classified as a disability. It interferes with your life. We learned yesterday how people with ADHD, you know, if they have severe ADHD, so to speak, they suffer more likely to suffer from anxiety, depression, substance abuse, eating disorders, have difficulty in the workplace, difficulty in academic settings, more likely to have unplanned pregnancies, more likely to get into car accidents, even have shorter average lifespans. Clearly, ADHD functions as a disability in these people's lives. However, this paragraph here says many who have ADHD do not consider themselves disabled. And so would these people then want ADHD to be classified as a disability for those legal protections and resources and such, while at the same time not considering themselves to be disabled? That is a paradox.
It is a paradox.
A seeming contradiction, which isn't really a contradiction in the sense of, you know, A equals B and A equals C, but which at first glance sounds like a contradiction. This is a paradox.
To be honest, I'm actually thinking of another group. This is not really politically correct. I know if I was in Canada, I wouldn't be able to say this on air, but I'm going to try. Uh-huh. I think what we're saying here is people who are neurodivergent, they want their cake and they want to eat it too, which means they want the legal protections. Like if I send my ADHD kid to a traditional school setting, I want an extra teacher there. Like as many schools now, if you have a kid who is neurodivergent or who has ADHD, the school will have another assistant sitting with your kid. So I want that assistant sitting with my kid. But when my kid is out there applying for a job as an adult or trying to get into the school sports team, I want people to not label them and say, little Johnny has ADHD.
Yeah.
So I want my cake and eat it too. And then I kind of think for example, this happens a lot in terms of race in North America because of the legacy of slavery, because of the legacy of discrimination against the indigenous peoples, whether it's in the U.S. or in Canada. In Canada, if you come from an Aboriginal background, you will get many extra points, for example, for higher education to get into university because so few people from this group, they actually can get to university for many historical reasons. And then, but so for example, the Aboriginal people, they're very happy to get the extra points that lets them get into better schools than what their test scores should let them get in. But if you want to label them at work, you say, oh, he's Aboriginal. A lot of times they don't want to be labeled Aboriginal. They just want to be seen as a normal person, just like everybody else. So I think this is a case where they want all the benefits, but at the same time, they don't want any of the negative stuff, negative labels that come with that benefit.
No, it is certainly, thank you for sharing that, Rebecca. That's, it's a profound question about how we deal with disability. I think we all, you know, can agree that the idea of disability exists, whether a particular disability qualifies as a disability or not, is more open to debate. But certainly, we all have hardships in some way. We all have difficulties, things we have to overcome, and how that shapes our identity is a profound issue, which we will not nearly get to the bottom of today, but certainly I appreciate the way this article touches on it. It goes on to say, though, in the next paragraph here, Neff has another quote. She says, when we have structures and environments, there's that word environment again, when we have structures and environments where they can support, the environments can support divergent thinking. Divergent thinking means creative thinking that may follow many lines of thought and tends to generate new and original solutions to problems. Untraditional thinking, you might think of it that way. Structures and environments that can support divergent thinking of people with ADHD. We can channel our interest into our career or creativity or out of the box thinking, basically another way of saying divergent thinking, another way of saying a non-traditional thinking, then there are powerful things that can come of that, she says. And I certainly, I think that is certainly true. We're always trying to support creative thinking, different kinds of thinking, and if having structures and environments that are supportive of people with ADHD can nurture that, then, that's all to the good. Our final paragraph, our final section here, strengths versus challenges. We have actually some revelations in this paragraph. We learn first that Neff herself is a medical professional with ADHD and autism. Autism, another neurological disorder, and affecting the brain's ability to develop normal social and communication skills. So Neff herself has ADHD and autism and yet works and thrives as a medical professional. Who else, Rebecca, turns out to be neurodivergent?
Greenberg. Yesterday we had Greenberg from that NGO, and she's a psychotherapist. She's a psychotherapist. She joined the organization as a psychotherapist of ADHD to study learning differences and apply these strategies to the organization. And I think that's so wonderful that people with this condition, they are helping other people with this condition, and they're raising awareness among the general public that we should treat people who are neurodivergent like them. We should treat them in a way that's more suitable for them.
Right, right. And the list goes on to include the author of our article himself, Jared Lindzen. Like them, it says, I too struggled in traditional academic and workplace settings, but have gone on to have a successful career as a freelance journalist and author, not despite my ADHD, but because of it. So our author joins that list of people who credit their ADHD for their success in life, although the author makes the clear point here, in the appropriate environment. In traditional academic and workplace settings, his ADHD was a disability, was a handicap, was a disadvantage. But as a freelance journalist, freelance meaning someone who works independently for different companies rather than being employed by one particular company, as a freelance journalist and author, he has flourished and he has gone on to write this article. And so finally, we conclude, as our collective understanding of neurodiversity expands, as it grows bigger, deeper, more nuanced, those with ADHD are finding better ways to what, Rebecca?
Leverage. That's another great word. So to leverage just means to use something to your advantage. So they're finding ways to use this to your advantage.
Right. The natural strengths that ADHD can give people, they are learning how to use them, how to leverage them to their advantage to overcome other challenges. Well, readers, we're certainly glad you've joined us for these 2 days on this fascinating article, this fascinating idea. We encourage you to think more about it. Use it as an opportunity to practice reading your English, speaking your English, and listening to your English every time you tune in here to the Advanced Radio Classroom Studio Show. And we encourage you to come back next time when we will have another new topic for you to listen to and read through and discuss. But for today, I'm Peter.
And I'm Rebecca.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.